it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. Hello and welcome to Happy Place, the show that asks what real contentment looks like to you. Today, I'm chatting to Dua Lipa.
You'd think that being optimistic or positive is the way forward. But I think just looking around and seeing, you know, the state of the world, it's like if you really want to connect with people, if you really want to have close relationships or you want to really understand someone, then you have to kind of get into the things that are outside your comfort zone. You can't just put a Band-Aid over something really terrible happening, being like, oh, well, you should just be grateful that other things are good in your life. It's like, that's kind of makes me feel a little bit nauseous instead of being like, okay, let's get to the root of this. Like, you're hurting, let's figure it out.
Dua's list of achievements as an artist is so extensive. There are all the Brit Awards, the Grammys, the MTV Music Awards, and her song New Rules has literally billions of streams on YouTube. But she's just as passionate about the rest of popular culture as she is music. Last year, she founded a brilliant newsletter called Service 95, which is basically a cultural concierge. She recommends all the latest stuff going on in style, art, and society more widely. It's very cool indeed, and I very much enjoyed looking around it. We had this chat remotely when we had the bizarre moment of spring snow in the UK. So I was here experiencing that, and Dua was in gorgeous sunny New York. I felt like I started to get a really lovely sense of the real Dua during this conversation. The one who loves yoga, meditation, art, theatre, and appreciating just hanging out in the same room as her oldest friends, but who's also incredibly driven and resilient. So I very much hope that you feel the same whilst you're listening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we start this exciting episode with lovely Dua, I wanted to give you an update on the Happy Place Festival and app. For all of you who are going to the festival and we can't wait to see you there, we now have a festival area in our Happy Place app featuring everything you need for your visit. It includes maps, schedules, practices from our festival experts so you can have a flavour of what's to come, plus some exclusive discounts from our festival shopping partners. Everything you need to get festival ready. Just head over to the Happy Place website now for more details and to download the app. And for anyone who wants to make this the summer of self-love, you can get 40% off full and unlimited access to the Happy Place app for a whole year as part of our summer offer. So whatever life throws at you, you'll have us right by your side. Featuring a wide variety of wellness practices all in one place, including breathwork, affirmations, ASMR, practices to aid sleep, and as you're about to hear, mine and Dua's favourites, yoga and meditation. We're just best mates, we love everything the same. The Happy Place app is the perfect companion to help you prioritise your well-being and take time for you this summer. Head to the Happy Place website for more details. Summer of Love offer ends on the 10th of September. Terms and conditions apply. Right, here it is. This is the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Dua.
Hey, Fern. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you and where are you? Because it looks very sunny where you are.
I know it looks sunny. I'm in New York. There's something about New York, even when it's freezing cold, it's blue sky. So it's nice.
So nice. It's snowing here. Well, it's gone to sort of shit snow. It's like sleety, not settling snow, but it is so cold. Oh, my God. I guess you had a bit of time in the UK at the start of the year from looking on your website and sort of mildly stalking you. When you are at home, what do you like to do? How do you like to spend time? Do you try and switch off when you're in London?
I'm a little bit of an extroverted extrovert. And so I really recharge around people, even though I love my time alone, and I've learned to really enjoy that and make sure that I have that space and do something for myself. I love to have friends around for dinner. I love to go to galleries. I love to go to different concerts. I love to explore and find different restaurants. This has kind of been the longest I've been in London for maybe like 6-7 years. So it's been really nice, but also there's a lot of social activities. I want to see all my friends. I want to see my family. It's great. I love exploring. And even when I'm home, I think I realized that while I was touring, while I was traveling, the one thing that I felt like every time when I was coming back to London, I was such a creature of habit and going to the same places. So when I had all this time at home, I was like, oh, I'm going to rediscover my city and see different things and branch out and go to places that I don't usually go to. And that's just been amazing. And like you said, you know, on my website with Service 95, it pushes me to just constantly want to see more things because I'm like, oh, then I can tell people about all this fun stuff that's happening in London. So it's nice.
I know we get so stuck in a rut with what we do when we're in our home area. And the only times that I do sort of touristy things are when I've got American relatives over and I'm like, let's do the Tower of London and the Natural History Museum. And I'm like, why have I never been to the Tower of London? I've lived in London for 41 years. What the hell? It's ridiculous. I'm very fascinated in the extrovert thing because I am an introvert.
Okay.
And I feel absolutely drained spending time with people. And it is of paramount importance, and I've learned this the hard way, that I have to have time where I'm completely on my own, doing very little actually, but completely on my own. And I've always wondered if some of it is a reaction to being in the public eye. And you're like mega in the public eye. So I wonder how you cope with this, because I find it not only draining, but often, I guess, a bit nerve-wracking being around other people who might have preconceived ideas of me or expectations of who I'm meant to be with them. And actually, I like being pretty quiet. And that's often not what people are expecting. So I feel sort of on high alert and a bit edgy when I'm around lots of people. How do you deal with that? If you love being in social settings and around lots of people, how do you mitigate that feeling of they need me to be, you know, the entertainer or, you know, the kind of the show person in the setting?
I guess that's interesting when you put it like that, because I definitely, you know, when it's like around people I don't know, there's definitely a pressure of like, you know, they're expecting me to be something. When I say I'm an extrovert, like I'm very organized. So my day is like down to the minute. It's how I feel like I can keep my life in control. But anytime that I have free, I like to see my friends. And so it's people that I've known for a really, really long time where I can really be myself. Like even if I'm tired or exhausted, just having a cup of tea and sitting on the sofa and catching up and getting to know, you know, what's been happening in their life and stuff that I don't necessarily get the chance to unless it's over FaceTime or Zoom or whatever. That's how I like to fill up my time. So I never really feel the pressure around people that I'm the most close with. You know, I can sit on a table and I'm not the most important one, and I never want to be. And I think that also just like it keeps me really grounded. You know, I have friends around my house all the time and they'll ignore me in my own house, and that's exactly where I want to be. You know, I'm like, this is perfect. But I think just like the energy of having people around is what I love. And I think when that's like people that I haven't seen in a long time, then I'm I'm more than happy to just sit on the sofa and do nothing but have like a little chat or be like, oh my God, I completely forgot to tell you this or something. So I guess in that sense, I'm happy to do it. Then obviously there's like the events and the other bits, which are a little bit more nerve-wracking, even for me when I go, oh, I'm an extrovert. I don't necessarily feel like I'm like an open book in that way where I'm just like, blah, here's my life. You know, this is what's happening. I'm definitely more reserved in some aspects with people that I don't know so well. But I think, yeah, when I think about it and my life, you know, my job is extraordinary, but I like to think of my life as normal. And I try to keep it that way where I want to just like go out and do things and not really think about myself as the, you know, doer, the artist, but just like doer, you know, your mate kind of thing.
Who is that doer then? What's that doer all about? I want to know about that doer. What does that doer like doing? How do you have those recharge moments? Because your life, I imagine, and from seeing it from the outside, is absolutely bananas. You know, it's really fast paced and it's really hectic and you've got all eyes on you and there's, you know, attention whether you want it or not at, you know, sort of 24/7. How are you just doer? How do you carve out time just to be the regular you? Maybe you feel like you need to sort of imagine doer before all the success. I sometimes think back to like little me before I started in this weird industry. Like, who is she? What did she like? What did she do? Has it been sort of hard to remember who you are without all of that craziness?
Not really. I think really my friends and my family keep me extremely grounded. And I think in the beginning, things were a little bit overwhelming because I just didn't understand, you know, why there was all this attention. You know, I didn't want to leave the house if I wasn't wearing makeup in case like a paparazzi would get a picture or something. And then I'd be like, oh, like, I don't know, those things would kind of, you know, work me up and then it would stop me from doing things that I really loved. And after a while, I was like, I just want to, you know, live my life and have fun. So I kind of just put like blinkers on like a horse. And I'm just like, I just look at like what's in front of me and I don't think about anything else. And that happened over time, but it just helped me a lot because I'm just like, you know, I just want to try and have like as many normal experiences, go to whatever restaurant I want to, not have to like, you know, think about it too much. But I also love to, you know, take some time for like self-care. I love to do yoga every day or some kind of workout, whether that's yoga, Pilates, boxing. While I'm here in New York, I love to do that. I've been getting into meditation over the past couple of years, still don't think I can completely shut off all my thoughts, but it's something
that's impossible.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
The only time you can do it is when you're dead, apparently.
Perfect. I'll be waiting.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's just like something that I do before bed to like wind down. And I don't know, it's little things that just help keep me grounded. And I think that's been, yeah, the saving grace.
Has that become more important the more you sort of understand the nature of the job that you have and the demands that surround it, that you really need to counterbalance it?
Definitely. I think if I constantly thought of myself as like, oh, I can't do this because people might look at me, or I can't be here, or like, but it's just like that, it's just not fun. It stops me from doing things that I love. It's just not the way that I see myself. And so
what kind of yoga are you into?
I love vinyasa, or the kind of power flow.
The power flow.
It's so good. It's just what I love about it is yoga is like the only time where I can actually completely shut off and I don't think about anything else. And especially if it's in a hot room and I'm sweating and disgusting and just really focusing on getting the moves and doing that, I really don't think about anything outside of those four walls. So that's really handy and nice.
I'm the same. Oh my God, vinyasa is the one. I think it's something to do with the breathing as well, that I'm so conscious that I'm doing the right inhale and exhale as well as the flow, that I cannot mentally think of anything else. It's impossible. When you went to your first yoga class, or I don't know how you started your sort of yoga experience, I remember my first class sort of going in and thinking, I don't get it. This is impossible. It feels horrendous. And it, you know, it takes time. I think that's the thing with yoga, people sort of watch you doing a beautiful headstand or something on Instagram and think, well, why can't I do that? But it's years to get to that place where it feels natural even.
Definitely. I mean, you know, working out as a whole has been like a journey for me. It's not my most favorite thing in the world. But I think once I get into the swing of it, then I really love it. It just like, it's like the first class back, or like you said, you're like first yoga class. I used to just see it as like, oh, I have to do this because it's like good for me to work out. Whereas when I kind of started seeing the mental benefits of yoga and the meditation of it and the practice and, you know, how strong I felt, I think that completely changed my mindset. And I was like, I no longer do this because it's like a workout and it's something that everyone has to do, you know, something for our body, but it's actually, it gives you so much more. And I think when my mindset changed around working out and the benefits of it, then it, yeah, it became a much more pleasant experience.
It is. Oh, it's very pleasant. I absolutely love it. And looking at your website, which I've had so much fun perusing around and reading the newsletters and looking at the articles and the sort of the tips and the cultural tip-offs and questions that you ask, there's lots in there. How important is it for you to be inspired when you're not writing and recording? Is it important to dive headfirst into culture, whether it's theatres, art galleries? Is that where you get a lot of your inspiration?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, I love to explore. I love to find out about things that I don't know, you know, especially while I was touring. But even before that, like, I would always make lists of like places to go, things to see, places to eat, places to stay. And then my friends, they could be anywhere in the world and they'd be like, oh, I'm here. Like, do you have anything? I'm like, yes, here's the list. Go have fun. And that kind of actually sparked the idea for my website Service 95, where I was like, okay, this is like a recommendations website, but at the same time offering stories that people wouldn't necessarily go looking for, and kind of just broadening the horizons and talking about things that I'm just really curious about. There was this one article, now that we're on the Happy Place podcast, that I was constantly like, you know, I was on Instagram, and while I'm touring and I'm, you know, on the road and working and posting pictures, that I'm on social media a lot more than, for example, now while I'm just in the studio. And I just kept seeing online this, like, a lot of what I think is toxic positivity, mm-hmm. of, you know, the idea of constantly having to be happy all the time, or constantly showing this like one good side of your life and never really talking about the hardships. And of course, being positive is really important, but it's I think it's important to also realize that there's other layers. And there was this one article I really wanted to commission. And again, it was because I was curious. It was because I wanted to know more about it and wanted to know if other people were feeling the same way. And there was a journalist, an author called Whitney Goodman, and she had written a book about toxic positivity. And she wrote a piece for us. And she was just, I think she said something along the lines of like, sometimes being positive is just a Band-Aid for a bullet wound. And I thought it was really interesting thing to say, because you'd think that being optimistic or positive is the way forward, but I think just looking around and seeing, you know, the state of the world, it's like, if you really want to connect with people, if you really want to have close relationships, or you want to really understand someone, then you have to kind of get into the things that are outside your comfort zone. You can't just put a Band-Aid over something really terrible happening, being like, oh, well, you should just be grateful that other things are good in your life. It's like, that's kind of makes me feel a little bit nauseous, instead of being like, okay, let's get to the root of this. Like, you're hurting. Let's figure it out. But anyway, now I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but I feel like it's like things like that, from daily life to then culture, to things that I can apply in the Service 95 meetings that then can become part of the newsletter, that can then go out into the world and see what other people's opinions are. And it's just about creating a community. And I think art, culture, activism, all those things is they're all like community based. And I think that was kind of the whole idea behind it, is bringing people together and understanding people's thoughts and ideas and stuff.
I liked that toxic positivity article. I read that one. And I think it's so important, especially with social media, where we're seeing sort of half a percent of someone's day or a tiny smidge of, you know, someone's opinion. And things do get really washed over with a sort of an emoji and a thumbs up. And it just doesn't really work like that. It's and you can't heal from stuff that you're not recognizing. I think, you know, like you say, there's a time for positivity and to put to look at the bright side at times. But I think from the interviews that I've done and on, you know, on Happy Place and the other stuff that I'm doing, it seems from my guests that unless you're willing to really go there and recognize what the pain is and why it hurts, you can't heal from it. There's no way you can by just sort of bypassing it and going, oh, it'll be all right. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no, you're completely right.
I love the list element as well of your website where you're giving people tips, because often people will say to me, oh, what's the best book you've ever read or whatever, and I go blank. I have none. I can't remember a single book I've ever read. I'm like, I don't know, I've never read a book. I read all the time, I can't remember anything. My mum has, this is absolutely mad, my mum has in her handbag at all times a bit of paper with a list of her favourite songs in case someone asks her.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's quite
cute. That's so cute.
But it's... It's like a very lo-fi version of your website, basically. It's hilarious.
That's
it's absolutely ridiculous. talking about wellness, and there's lots of articles on Service 95 that cover different elements like the toxic positivity one. You've got stuff on men's mental health and nutrition and whatnot. What is wellness to you? What does it mean? You know, we have these words that get battered about, like self-care, which I think are sort of far too ubiquitous without us really delving into like what does that even mean? What does that mean to you in your extremely busy lifestyle? How do you take care of yourself, and what does wellness mean to you?
Gosh, I mean, it's an interesting question, because I think for everyone it means something different. And for me, I think having that 1 hour a day for me to do something for myself, that yoga, that workout, you know, waking up calmly, organizing my calendar down to the minute, that for me is wellness, because I know that that will keep me, you know, I know exactly what my day looks like. That keeps me really calm, keeps me really organized. I manage to do everything I need to do in a day. The meditation at night, spending time with my friends and my family and going for dinners and having a really good like work-life balance and not allowing my work to completely consume me. And yeah, I think that for me, and I think everyone can interpret it in their own way, I think boundaries are important. I think boundaries is a great form of wellness. I think when you can kind of set those.
How are you at those?
I think I've become much better at boundaries. As I'm getting older, I just feel like I know what I need to, you know, to keep myself in check and to keep myself happy and not, you know, maybe to say no to a couple more things. I think I was definitely a person, because, you know, that so many opportunities would come and I didn't want to miss out or feel like I was ungrateful that these incredible opportunities were happening. So I would say yes to everything, but it would also be to the point where I'd be quite tired at the end of the day. And then I'd still make time and go out for a drink with my friends. And then by the end of it, I'm like, all right, I'm dead. I need to fall asleep. I'm exhausted. And so now I've got a much healthier work-life balance, which is great. But yeah, boundaries are important. And I think everything in moderation is good.
Can you be pretty boundaried with your team in terms of, if you know that you need that hour to do yoga or whatever it is, do you feel, I guess it's confidence, isn't it? Because I struggle with this one. Do you feel confident enough to say, look, I need an hour. I can't have my day that packed. Do you feel able to do that?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think also, you know, the second I know what hour my time's going to happen, I put it in my diary. Everyone is alerted that is the hour I'm not available. And then it's good because like after an hour's workout, then I can take like a slow shower. I can like get ready. I can do my thing. You know,
eke it out.
Yeah, you know, I can drag it out a little bit, unless of course, you know, I have to be on a shoot, in which case it's not necessarily my time and I'm there for work and I go and do that, and that's, you know, that's my priority on that day. But I think for the most part, you know, I'm pretty good at setting boundaries, and I have a great team who's really, really supportive of that.
Have you ever hit burnout?
I think there have been times where I think I've gotten maybe close. And that usually happens, you know, releasing new music, there's a lot of promo, there's performances, there's rehearsals, there's photo shoots, there's, you know, there's a lot going on. And again, it's that I want to be able to do all these amazing and fun things that I've been looking forward to doing. So I say yes to them and I go off and do them. But now I think with the way that, you know, my schedule is and we space things out in a way that makes me feel good, now I think I'm in a good place to not suffer from burnout. But it was definitely something in the beginning that I'd be worried about. But I don't know. I have this like high octane personality. So I feel like I can do a lot in my day.
Yeah, it's serving you greatly, that energy, without a doubt.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
How do you feel about fame? Because you're at this level now where you're globally famous. You've got nearly 90 million followers on Instagram alone. And a large portion of those people will be mega fans. People that, you know, there is this sort of construct of fame where we put people on a pedestal when we really love them. And we will have grown up having those same feelings about other people. We put them on a pedestal. We see them as these sort of perfect beings. Do you feel that you've got to live up to that level of perfection?
Oh God, I think fame is such a weird thing. I think, you know, when words like role model or, you know, something like that gets thrown around, there's definitely a pressure, because I feel like, you know, there's like lots of kids that are looking up to me. And I think also because I have a younger brother and a younger sister, I've always tried to like set some kind of like example, or like try and be someone that they can look up to and know that's there to support them and whatever. So I don't think that I like try to go out my way to like be outrageous or any, it's not really my thing. I think, you know, for me, fame is something that just came with my job, but it's not something that I define myself with at all. You know, there's a pressure, but I'm also, you know, I'm human. I'm not perfect. I'm going to make mistakes. I also have to try and live my life. And if I, you know, if how I'm telling you is like, I'm trying to live my life as normally as possible. I'm trying to not shy away from having real human experiences, then, it, you know, it's fine. I think I stopped being, you know, hard on myself a long time ago on like what people think or what people expect of me or, you know, what they want me to be, or, you know, everyone has an opinion and they'll always have an opinion and they'll always have something to say. And I think if I just, you know, surround myself with the people I love and the people who I trust and the people who trust me, you know, vice versa, then, you know, I'm in a good place. And I think the fame element doesn't really affect me in that way.
Well, it's a really brilliant approach, and I'm sure one that you've had to fast track to get to because of how quickly everything has happened and how you're, you know, internationally known. I think it's really hard. You know, I still struggle if I get horrible critique. I'm up for constructive criticism. Bring it on. Yeah. I want to be better. I want to do my best job. I want to keep growing and learning. But when it's just mean or just, you know, unnecessary, I still, a part of me, the logical part knows it's nonsense. Yeah. I don't need to take it on board. And like you say, you've got the ones in your life that you love and you trust and you take heed of their advice or words of encouragement. But I still find that one hard, you know. And you're not the sort of person that's sort of done anything controversial or had any sort of shitty stories written about you from as far as I can see. But I still think it is a hard pill to swallow when anyone says anything negative, because you sort of, you question yourself. And that I think is the really tough bit of being in the public eye, is having so much outside commentary, I guess.
I think, you know, of course, it's that one thing of like you read one good comment and then you read one bad one and that's the one that sticks with you. Definitely, you know, that happens. I think something that's actually been interesting, because I'm always like, oh, you know, social media is such a difficult place to be in, especially for the younger generations. But even like there's so much comparison, there's so much, you know, opinions and comments and people being mean and hiding behind a screen or, you know, a little egg on Twitter or whatever. But for one, I had to take myself off Twitter because that one just felt like, you know, people were just constantly just saying things at the expense of other people to try and get some kind of, you know, who could be the funniest at the expense of someone else to kind of up their social media cred or whatever. Like it just wasn't, it just stopped being appealing and fun. But one thing I also realized for myself, you know, like tabloids and online stories, like everyone will have their own rhetoric. Everyone will make something up. A lot of the time, none of it's true. And social media is the one place where I can take my own story into my own hands, you know, present myself in the way that I want people to see me for who I am. And I think that's like something good that comes from that, because I think if people were to listen to stuff that the tabloids were saying, you know, it's unrealistic and it's not, you know, it's not a true depiction. It's like fan fiction of what somebody else wants someone's life to be.
Yeah, I think it's the best tool to take back your own story and to say things how you want them. Would you say that you have adapted to this very full-on lifestyle because of the changes that you went through as a child? Because you grew up initially in the UK and then you moved to Kosovo, I think you were 11.
Yeah.
And went to a high school there and had to integrate with new friends and a whole new school system, etc., before you moved back to the UK a bit later on in your teens. Do you think that set you in good stead to be pretty adaptable? You're flexible in terms of meeting new people, traveling, etc.
Definitely. I think, you know, my kind of unconventional upbringing definitely helped shape me. It's interesting because when you're in it as a kid, you don't think of it as much. And now looking back in hindsight, you can see how that was such a formative experience, especially when I, like you said, born and raised in London, moved to Kosovo at the age of 11. Now I could speak Albanian. It was my first language. You know, I spoke it at home, and then English I learned in school. But when I moved to Kosovo, I couldn't really read and write in Albanian. And I thought I could speak fluent Albanian, but I was like the English girl talking Albanian. So I had an accent trying to fit in, you know, being the new girl in school when you're 11 years old. It's quite like an intense point in your life, you know, trying to make friends, learning a language, trying to figure out who you are in the midst of all of that. And then at 15, moving back to London. And although I had friends in London, it was like a new school again. It was having new experiences. It was making new friends. And so I think that life experience has made me extremely adaptable to anything that life throws at me. It's like, okay, well, this is happening. So I'm just going to, you know, take it in my stride and figure it out. And I think that's why I connect so much with like the idea of, you know, life really starts when you're outside of your comfort zone, because I feel like that's really where you do the most growing up, where you do the most exploring and discovering of yourself, is like when you're put in uncomfortable situations and you're forced to figure it out. And the things that you don't really think about as a child, and you're like, okay, well, this is just happening. And I was very excited to move to Kosovo. You know, I was like, that's my home. And I was like, oh, and my name Dua won't be so weird for people when I go back there. But also, it wasn't a very common name over there either. Yeah, it was interesting experiences that I'm so grateful for, because they helped me build like thick skin and helped me grow at a rapid speed.
Yeah. And then you moved back to the UK without your parents because you wanted to pursue, I'm not sure if it was singing specifically at this point, but certainly to sort of move into the arts. How was that moving back here? How did your parents feel about you moving back here?
Now, when we talk about it, I mean, my little brother's 17 now, but when he was 15, like I just kept turning to my parents. I was like, I can't believe I lived on my own when I was 15. And I don't know how I even managed to persuade you guys to let me do that. And my mom always goes, oh, but you were a different kid. And I was like, I don't know what that means. But it was, I think we had a lot of trust. I think also the idea that I wanted to do music, and there was also that thing of like, you have to finish your GCSEs if you want to get into uni in London. And so that was also a little thing that I could use in my battle for, please let me go to London and live on my own. And my parents found a girl whose parents they knew. And so I flat shared with her. So they didn't feel like I was completely alone, and I was constantly talking to them on the phone and they would come and visit. But it was just an interesting time. My friends, you know, then became my family. So my friends that I made in school in London, there was really, you know, on my first day at school, I was having lunch alone, and then two girls, Ella and Sarah, came up to me and they're like, oh, we heard you're the new girl and we'd love to be your friend. And that was it. I never let go of them. So they're like, when I talk about the friends that I hang out with, who I can be totally myself, it's them who come over and I see. And then my friend Rosie as well. And, you know, I just have like this really tight knit group of friends that have been there, have been my family, who I've spent Christmases with when I couldn't go home, or, you know, they were always there for me in different ways. And so, yeah, I don't know if I had ever had children, then, you know, if I would let my 15-year-old live alone. I don't know. I just had this idea that I wanted to do music, and I had to be in a place where everything was happening. And that was London. It wasn't, you know, Kosovo now has changed so much and it's global. But when I was living there, it was completely different. You know, you couldn't put a song up on Spotify and expect to be discovered. You know, you're in Kosovo. It's going to be very hard for people to hear you. Whereas now everything has opened up so much, and I'm so deeply connected to Kosovo and everything that it has given me and helped me grow so much. And my family and I, we do a festival out there every summer called the Sunil Festival. And that all kind of came, you know, started with the idea of like, I want to bring artists to Kosovo, because when I was growing up there, I could never see my favorite artists come down. And it was a way of bringing, you know, international artists and our domestic artists all together to kind of create this experience of the people there. And that's been a really, really rewarding and beautiful experience, and something that I look forward to every summer.
Oh my God, I bet it's so joyful.
It's really fun.
I mean, you're juggling so much in terms of your career as an artist, the festival that you run with your family, the website, the newsletter, the podcast. Where does your drive come from? Is that something you can see within your parents? Is it in their spirit? Have you sort of by osmosis picked that up?
Yeah, I think, you know, from when I was really little, you know, my parents moved to London because of the Yugoslavian war. I just think I watched them work nonstop, do multiple jobs, go to uni in the evening. They never made me feel like I was missing out on anything. You know, they were really there for me in the whole, and they seemed to be able to juggle all these things and still make it work. I think watching them was really inspiring for me. I don't know, someone at one point, there was an interview a long time ago, someone said, oh, it sounds like you have an immigrant work ethic. I think that's really just, you know, it's this kind of feeling that any moment things could be taken away from you. So you want to make the most of it. You want to work hard. You want to be in a place where you feel like you belong. And it's all those parts that really make me. And it's all the experiences. It's watching my parents. It's the traveling around between Kosovo and London. It's living alone. It's all these things have pushed me and helped me find that drive and that passion and that curiosity and that thing. It just keeps me going every day. I absolutely love it.
And that doesn't lessen with the more successful you get, because you've ticked so many things off. If you had written sort of a life list, I'm pretty sure you would have ticked them all off. You know, the people, the artists that you've collaborated with, worked with, the units of albums you're selling, the tours you're able to put on. Do you still have ambition or goals that you sort of set for yourself?
Massively, definitely. Mm. There's a lot of things that I feel like I haven't done yet and that I'm looking forward to doing. And I'm working on new music at the moment. And, you know, it's exciting to have dreams and goals. But again, dreams and all my dreams terrify me and scare me. And
why is that?
I just, it's again, it's like doing something that's outside of my comfort zone, pushing a boundary in a way that people wouldn't necessarily expect me to, try something different. And I think that is something that I love doing. So yeah, and I'll just keep doing it for as long as it makes me really happy.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, isn't it? I think if you're enjoying it, that is success, rather than it being something that's quantifiable or, I don't know, something you tick off a list. It is just about, you know, luckily really enjoying what you do. It's so brilliant. Another goal you set yourself alongside running the website is your podcast At Your Service, which I listened to some lovely episodes. I really liked the Dan Bakay one, the ex-editor-at-large at the New York Times. That was fascinating. What an amazing person he is. When I'm doing these interviews, and I guess for as long as I've been interviewing people, I've always, I guess the desire is to really get to like the most human part of who that person is. So looking beneath the job or the title or the success or whatever it is and getting to the really human bit. What is it that fascinates you about interviewing people, or what do you want to discover from your guests?
I think for me, it's exactly the same thing. It's finding out how people got to where they are, the story behind their experience, how I can help assist get that, you know, story out to to just more people, I suppose. And I think it's been a really interesting experience because I've been so used to being the person getting interviewed on the other side. So it was a very scary thing to come to terms with, of like, okay, now I have to interview someone, and how do I make it really interesting? How do I get, you know, how do I ask questions that maybe they don't necessarily get asked all the time? Or how can I dig a little bit deeper? And I think it was amazing because people were so generous and so giving with their stories. But at the same time, like, I learned so much. You know, my first ever episode was with Olivia Roustan, who's the creative director of Balmain. And through our conversation, it just got to a point where he was talking about how his whole perception of perfection had changed, you know, after an accident that he had had. And, you know, there were so many, you know, then I had a conversation with Dan Levy, and we were talking about how failure isn't such a bad thing. And I think it's so great to have these incredible, affluent people talking about failure, because you put them on such a pedestal, like you said, and you see them as these perfect beings, but you have to also realize everything that goes on behind that, because there are downfalls, there are issues, there are problems, there are troubles that happen. When I was speaking to Monica Lewinsky, you know, she's an incredibly strong person with everything that she went through. But I think what was really fascinating to me was how much time, effort, and like financial investment that she put into her mental health. And it really, really showed in the way that she held herself throughout the whole interview. And then it's again about creating community, creating a space for people to be able to connect, you know. With Riz Ahmed, I felt like we had a bond, you know, over our immigrant experience, and that was also really touching and interesting to hear him talk about his experience. And I know that so many people that listened to that episode were just like really moved by that, because you wouldn't think that someone like Riz Ahmed would go through such trying times as well. And so I don't know. I get a lot from this podcast, and it was a very scary thing for me to start even thinking about. I'm going to do a season 3 now soon as well. And everything that I've done with season 1 and 2 has been really doing a deep dive into people's lives. And I think for season 3, I would love to go into it more topic based and dig into one topic and just do a deep dive on that. So that's going to be interesting as well, and I'm excited.
That's so cool. Have you found it a relief to be on the other side, because you don't have to really, I don't know, keep sharing stories about yourself or talking about things you're doing? I find it such a relief doing this part of the interview. I love it. Yeah. And I'm a control freak, so I like to be in control. I'm like, all right, I'm going to steer this over here now. And you can't do that as much when you're being, you know, you have to do those horrible promo days where you probably have to sit on Zoom or in a hotel room and have numerous people back to back coming in asking you the same bloody questions that you've got to answer. Has it felt like a bit of a relief asking the questions?
Yeah, it's definitely a relief. It's also because it's like my own platform, I don't feel like anyone's trying to catch me out. So I'm so much more free, even with my own stories. You know, I'm so happy to talk about my own experience for that connection with the guests so we can like dig in deeper and talk about it. And there's never at any point in my podcast am I trying to get a headline or catch someone out or anything. So it's a very like freeing experience to just talk about it so freely. And I don't like to gatekeep the good shit in this form on the podcast, on Service 95 and the recommendations and everything. Like I'm so happy to just like be very open and free with it. And it gives me a lot of confidence and joy, and I love being on the other side of things. So
well, you created yourself a really lovely safe space where you get to explore stuff on your terms, which I think is needed now more than ever, especially for someone in your position where, you know, you have to go and perform on big stages or TV shows where, you know, it's there's an audience already there, and then you've got to perform for them or be there for them. To create your own world, your own safe space where you can explore things on your terms, I think that's really liberating.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that I get to do it and to have all these new experiences that I never thought would come into my world or cross with the music and stuff. I love having all these like other things alongside it. It really makes me very happy.
This is the most basic question in the world, but I'm asking it because I'm genuinely interested. Who would be your dream guest on the podcast?
Oh,
I mean, I get asked that all the time and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, I don't even know anymore. I've like, well, I've been lucky that I've ticked a lot of them off the list.
I know, you've done a lot.
But I'm like, oh my God, sometimes I think I don't know and I have to really dig to think about it. I think, who did I think? I thought of someone yesterday that I'd like to have on. Now I'm doing that thing where I can't think of my favourite book. I can't think of a human. I can't think of any humans. I've got no humans in my brain. I can't think of anyone.
It's really tough because a lot of my like dream guests that I had like a big list for, I asked them for season 3. And so I have those names like swirling around in my head.
Oh, I know. I want Elton John. You can help me with
that.
I've never interviewed him. I've interviewed him, but not for the podcast. And we're both from Pinner. So there's my in.
Okay, that's
right. We're from the same town. He used to play in a pub opposite my granddad's florist that was called Dandelion. So we're like, we're so tight, he just doesn't even know it. We really are. Oh my God. Well, look, Dua, I would like to give you more than an hour of your day to go and do yoga or whatever you want. So I'm gonna halt the interview so you can go and have more free time because you jolly well need it. Thank you so much for being on Happy Place.
Thank you,
and just the best of luck with all of your brilliant endeavours outside of your music career, because it's very impressive indeed.
Thank you so much, Fern. I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this with me.
Dua, it was absolutely my pleasure. I love that we could connect over so much. Maybe not the extroverted extrovert thing, but definitely the yoga and the meditation, art and all that jazz. Massive thanks again to you for your time, Dua. Service 95 is the name of Dua's newsletter. You can sign up for all of her recommendations at service95.com. And if it's book recommendations you're after, you can come and join the Happy Place Book Club. We're on Instagram at Happy Place Book Club, and we have a newsletter as well. Do check it out. Huge thanks again to Dua, to the producer Anushka Tate at Rethink Audio, and to you bloody brilliant people. Chat soon, lovelies.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.